Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Reading from Chaitanya Bhagavat, chapter 10, the conclusion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Mahaprakash Leela. Lord Chaitanya was speaking to Mukundadas, and then Krishna's Kaviraj is starting to explain how devotees can see the Lord because they have devotion. They follow the scriptures, they've realized the scriptures. The conclusion of the scriptures is devotion. Bhakti mama vijananti, yavanchas tasmi tatvata. Krishna can be understood by devotion. Then Krishna asks Kaviraj, well, Swami, we heard yesterday he's giving us different benedictions for hearing the chapter. And he says, if anyone serves the Lord, he's able to see these pastimes. Then this verse is 272. Wait a second. So it's actually here, 266. Emata jata jata bhaktira mandal, je kaila stuti vara paila sakal. In this way, all the devotees who offered prayers received benedictions. Because in the whole chapter, Haridas Thakur came and offered prayers. Kulavecha Sridhar came and offered prayers. Srivas Thakur offered prayers. Mukundadas offered prayers. And each one of them was given benedictions and blessings by the Lord. So this is what, now they're summarizing the chapter. This is the very end of chapter 10. Srivas Pandit Ati Maha Mahodar Atayeva Tandra Grihe Esabha Bihar. Srivas Pandit was most magnanimous. Therefore, these pastimes took place in his house. Jara jena mata ishta prabhu apanar, se deki vishambara se avatar. The devotees each saw Vishambara in whichever incarnation they most adored. So their ishta. Whatever, if your ishta was Ram, you were Murari Gupta, and your worshipful Lord is Ramachandra, when you would look at Lord Chaitanya, you would see Ramachandra. There's a pastime in Jagannath Puri about one devotee, a Ganapati Bhakta, and he came there on the day of Snan Yatra, and he was told that Jagannath is the Lord of the universe. He's the Supreme Lord and he's Bhaktivatsal. He's very affectionate to his devotees. And he reciprocates with the devotees and however they approach him. He can fulfill everyone's desires. And you'll see your Lord. He's the universal Lord, Jagannath, the Lord of the universe. He's a Nath. Everyone's Nath. Everyone's Lord. So the Ganapati Bhakta was preached to by devotees of Jagannath. And so he made a yatra to Jagannath Puri. He wanted to see this Jagannath, this famous Jagannath in Purushottam Kshetra. He wanted to see because the devotees were saying, yes, you're a Ganapati Bhakta. If you go to see Jagannath, you will also see your Ganapati there. But Jagannath is Ram and Krishna and Ganapati and Shiva. Everyone, all the lords are contained within him. He's Sarvavatari. So he came. And when he went into the temple, he saw Jagannath. He didn't see Ganapati. He said, what is this? You said that I would see my Lord Ganapati here, but I see the Jagannath, this special form of Jagannath. I don't see my Lord Ganapati. So then he went away. He was disturbed. He was somewhat upset. So that was the morning of Snan Yatra. And then in the afternoon, he said, I'm leaving Puri. I was cheated. All these bhaktas, they told me I would see my Lord here, but I don't see my Ganapati here. I see the big smile of Jagannath, and I see his nose, small nose, and his two short arms. I don't see Ganapati. So he left, he was leaving Puri, and he was sitting in one underneath one tree. And he was upset, he was crying. And someone came, and they said, why are you crying? He said, oh, everyone said I would see Ganapati and Jagannath, but I don't see. And that devotee said, oh, what do you mean? I'm sure Jagannath will reciprocate with you. He will fulfill your heart with happiness. He will satisfy the longing and hankering of your heart. If you want to see Ganapati, surely Jagannath will show you Ganapati. That is also one of his expansions. Ganapati is also Krishna. Everything's in Krishna. Krishna's in everything. So then the man was convinced. The Ganapati Bhakta, he went back on the afternoon of Snan Yatra. And when he went back on the afternoon, he saw that there was no, Jagannath was not Jagannath, but he had a long nose. It's called the Gajapati. It's called Gajapati Vesh. And Gajapati means elephant, Gaja, like a Gajendra. Gajapati Vesh. So he had this long nose, and he had these huge, big flapping ears. And the Ganapati Bhakta said, oh, this is my Ganapati. This is right. Jagannath has become Ganesh. And he paid dandavats and offered prayers and stutis and Ganesh, prayers to Ganesh. Jai, you know, Ganesh, whatever. Jai Ganesh, Sri Ganesh, Jai Ganesh. And he was very happy. And I think all of you are aware of that when you have Snan Yatra at Jagannath Mandir. In the afternoon of Snan Yatra, then Jagannath appears in the Ganapati Vesh. Is it you've seen? Has everyone seen in Jagannath Mandir? He has big ears and he has the features and face just like Ganapati. And the same thing they do every year in Jagannath Puri. I've been in Puri several years. I've seen this function. This Utsav Snan Yatra, and also in the afternoon they have outside. The darshan is outside on the wall. And the snan is on the wall. The Lord is so merciful. He comes and sits on his boundary wall and takes a bath in full public view. This is the mercy of Jagannath. Can you imagine? In India, all the houses have boundary walls around them. Could you imagine getting your older brother and your sister and telling them to take off all their clothes, and you'll take off all your clothes and sit on the boundary wall. Sit on the boundary wall in full public view and ask your mother and father and all your friends to come and bathe you with Ganges water and yogurt and milk. And everybody can look up and see you. And that's what Snan Yatra is. Jagannath is just standing there. There's nothing, no clothes. And Sister Subhadra and Balaram, thousands and thousands of people, they come on the street. And then they after the snan, and it's like around 12 o'clock, then they cover that area, then the Lord eats and rests, and he dresses. Then he gives darshan there on the wall as Ganapati. So Kaviraj is saying the same thing, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he reciprocated with each devotee and showed him exactly the form he wanted to see. So this pastime of Lord Chaitanya is also the pastime of Jagannath. This is in Navadvip. Maha maha parakash ihare sebali e matakari gora chandra kutuhali. These wonderful pastimes of Gaurachandra are known as his Mahaprakash, great revelation. Emata dine dine, Prabhura Prakash, Sapanike Deki Sabha Chaitanyara Das. In this way, all of Chaitanya's servants and their wives saw the Lord reveal himself day after day. Dehamani Nirvasheshe Jehayena Das. Se dekite pai e sabha vilas. Anyone who renders service to the Lord with his body and mind is able to see these pastimes of the Lord. So this is the whole idea. It's told, Vrindavanam pratyajat param ekam param nagachati. That Krishna never takes a step out of Vrindavan. Because it's his nitya stan, his eternal place of pastimes. So Lord Chaitanya, he never takes a step out of Mayapur. He has his expansions, like Krishna had expanded in his Mathura form and Dwarka form. So the form in Puri is the expanded form. The form that goes to Katwa is the expanded form. These are the three forms of Lord Chaitanya. One form goes and takes sannyas, one form is residing there. But that's why devotees ask Prabhupada, why do we worship Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda with hair? Because why don't we worship as sannyas, with sannyas vesh, shaved head, danda, sannyas vesh, sannyas cloth? Prabhupada said, no, we worship Lord Chaitanya and Mayapur, Navadvip, his eternal form, his eternal Leela. Now this is, as Krishna has his Astakali Leela, and Vrindavan, Lord Gauranga has his Astakali Leela. He never takes a step outside. So Krishna's Kaviraj is saying that one who's saturated his mind, he's saying his mind, who serves with his body and mind, deha, mane, nirvisheshe he hayena das, he can actually see dekite vilas, gaur vilas, the beautiful pastimes of the Lord can be seen by one who's absorbed in service. Right here, even today, in Mayapur, Navadvip Dham. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was sitting in Godrondweep. And he told this to his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And his son narrated this pastime to some of his disciples. In the early morning, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to sit in Godrum, in his Swananda Sukhara Kunj, and do his bhajan, he was chanting around Mangal Arti time. All of a sudden, there would be a very strong gust of wind. Just a big gust of wind. And everyone knows that usually around sunrise, especially in the country, Vrindavan or Mayapur, right around the time of sunrise, there's some wind starts blowing. It may be very gentle and calm throughout the evening. Even the day may be calm, but right around the time of sunrise, there's always some wind, some cold breeze comes. But this was a little bit before that time, before sunrise, Brahma Muhurta, an hour and a half before. Every day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was sitting in his kutir, he would notice this big wind was coming from behind him. The wind was coming, would come by, big wind would come and go towards what he was seeing as a future yogapeet. Would go towards the yogapeet. Now sometimes from the direction of the yogapeet, before the temple was built and before he finally had the revelation, he was hearing some kirtan or some musical instruments coming from that area of the yogapeet. Then this wind was coming by him, and he was in a very strange feeling he was having over his body when this wind went by. And he was thinking, what is this? What is this? And then one day, during Brahma Muhurta, when this wind went by, he was praying, intensely praying, Bhaktivinoda, what is this breeze, this hawa, this wind? And then it was revealed to him that this is Lord Nrisingadev from the Sringapali. The Sringapali is kind of a little bit behind Godrum. The Sringa from the Sringapali was coming every day, going past Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house, across the Jalangi, and going to the yoga pit to attend the Mangal Arti of Lord Chaitanya. Maybe in Srivasangam or in that area. So this was a revelation that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to further convince him that actually this was the place of Lord Chaitanya's yogapit. So this is showing that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was seeing and perceiving on some level the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya even 120 years ago. So it's a fact, devotees that are on that level, they can see the pastimes of the Lord. And this theme is going to be developed here also. Se navadvipayara kata 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 ache tapasvi sannyasi gyani yogi maje maje yavat yavat kala gita bhagavata sabai pade kehava padaya karo dharma nahi nade. Many renunciates, sannyasis, gyanis, and yogis lived in Navadvip. They studied or they taught Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam for their whole lives, yet they did not change their religious practices. In other words, as often you see now, Chinmayananda from Rishikesh, Swami Chinmayananda, Apakka Mayavadi, he regularly gives classes on Bhagavad Gita. And so many Mayavadis, they give classes in Bhagavad Saptahas. And maybe they make a profession or their whole life they're speaking Gita and Bhagavatam. But they never change their viewpoint. They're Brahmavadis or they're Advaitinvadis. They follow Advaitin Gyan. And Vrindavan Das Thakur is saying, they never change their dharmic viewpoint. They're Mayavadis, even though they're contacting the Bhagavatam, which is the Sarup, the Supreme Sarup of Krishna and Radha. And they're contacting the Gita. They contact it, but they don't follow it. They don't change their persuasion, their viewpoint. They're Mayavadis, even they read the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna, and they're teaching Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna says, Madmana Bhava Madbhakto, Madhyajimam Namaskar. Always think of me, become my lover, become my devotee, worship me, surrender to me, depend on me. This is the teaching of Gita and Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is teaching Gopi Prem, Braja Prem, to love Krishna, to dedicate everything to Krishna in service, not to merge into Brahman. So he's saying that so many of these kind of people were there. They knew Shastra very well, and they were renounced. But they did not retire from their respective cherished religious principles of undergoing austerities, renunciation, and endeavoring to merge in Brahman and realizing the super soul. In other words, they didn't understand the true purport of Gita and Bhagavatam. The true purport of Gita and Bhagavatam is to become a devotee of Krishna, become a bhakta, not a jnani, become a pure devotee, not a Brahma Suyuja. Nirvisheshvari. Kaya kaya parigraha kichu nahilai mrita akumara dharme sharira shushai. Some of these personalities, they live by a vow of not accepting anything from others. In other words, they wouldn't accept any charity. I don't know how they got on, but somehow whatever just came their way, whatever food rolled in front of them or something. So he's saying, in other words, Vrindavan Das Thakur is saying there are some very austere people living in Navadvipa, very learned, very renounced. They wouldn't accept anything from anyone. They wouldn't touch any money. Sometimes you meet sadhus, they say, no, I don't touch any money. If they offer them some money, they won't take it. They won't take anything from anyone's hand. They simply go to trees. They only take from the hand of God. They pick some fruits off of trees, or they collect some nuts from the trees. But they won't take any charity because they don't want to get any karmic connection. If you accept anything from anyone's hand, then there's a karmic exchange. And Padma Puran, which is also in English, there's two or three chapters about the exchange of punya and pap between individuals by eating, by sharing, by sitting. So many ways one gets good and bad karma from other people, or bad results. So they live so austerely, but still, Vrindavan Das Thakur is saying they didn't realize the supremacy of devotion. Because the whole discussion here is, it all started with Mukunda Das, who would sometimes mix with Mayavadis or other types of personalities and say, oh, bhakti is not so great. Bhakti is not so supreme. And Lord Chaitanya, of course, rebuked him for that and then accepted him. So this whole last so many verses is all about accepting the supremacy of bhakti and showing how there are so many people like Mukunda Das who temporarily put down bhakti. There are so many people living in Navadvipa, very so-called exalted people, jnanis, tapasvis, renunciates, very self-controlled people. They also didn't accept the supremacy of bhakti. Jnana superior, yoga superior, tapasvi, renunciation is superior. Bhakti is for sentimentalists, for women, sentimentalists, foolish people. So Vrindavan Das is saying, these are more unfortunate people. Se kani hena vaikuntera shukahaila brita abhimani eka janana dekila. Not one of these useless, proud persons could see the happiness of Vaikuntha had manifested there. In other words, Lord Chaitanya had advented in Navadvipa, and he was regularly having his pastimes in Shiva Sangam. And wherever he was, it was like Vaikuntha. It was not like it. It's a spiritual world. All joy, all fulfillment, all prosperity and happiness. Everyone was thriving in his association. But because so many other people are in Navadvipa and they were miserable. They're simply becoming dry from their austerities. They're not relishing this wonderful, anxiety-free, blissful atmosphere of Lord Chaitanya's association. says that the happiness of Vaikuntha had manifested in Shiva Sangam. Shiva Sera Dasa Dasi Jahari Dekila Shastrapadiya O Keho Tahana Janila. Although the Lord Mahaprabhu was seen by the Dasas and Dasis, the servants and maid servants of Shivas, he could not be known by those persons despite their study of scriptures. So what, this English is a little unclear, but what it's saying in the verse, that the simple people, the Shudras and the Shudranis, the servants that were serving in the house of Shivas, they could see Mahaprabhu. They saw, although they were not learned. So he's kind of counterbalancing. A few verses he's saying, the big Jnanis, the big Chaturvedis, Bhattacharyas, etc., they could not see Lord Chaitanya. They could not enter the Vaikuntha atmosphere. But the very simple and humble servants of Srivas, who were not renounced, they were not learned, they were not detached, but they were humble. And they were rendering service. Knowingly or unknowingly, they were serving the Lord. They were sweeping the courtyard of Shiva Sangam. They were picking flowers for his garland. They were doing so many sevas in Shiva's house. They got, because of that service, because of that humility and that saralata, that simplicity of their heart, they could see. That's what Vrindavanas Thakur is saying. They saw Lord Chaitanya as he is. Although these other great personalities, they couldn't see. Because of their pride, because of their refusal to accept the path of bhakti. So the purport, he's saying the same point. In spite of achieving proficiency in the shastras, the teachers who were engaged in their study and recitation of the Vedas could not see Lord Gaurasundara. But the servants and maidservants of that foremost Vaishnava, Srivas, they were easily able to see that supremely rare object of vision. So that's like the Bible. The Bible says the meek and humble shall inherit the kingdom of God. There's a phrase like this. Meek. Meek means dainya bhav. Those that are very humble and submissive, they will actually see the kingdom of God. They will enter the kingdom of God. And this is what's being told here. Murari Guptera Dase J Prasari Paila Kea Matta Mudaya Taha Na Dakila. The mercy received by the servants of Murari Gupta could not be seen by shaving one's head. In other words, by becoming detached from the world. One cannot achieve mercy of Lord Chaitanya by wealth, high birth, or scholarship, for the Lord is controlled only by devotional service. So it's like neti-neti, not by this, not by that, not by this, not by that. Service is love. Love purchases the Lord, nothing else. Not learning, not renunciation. So we can see also from this that the emphasis in Gaudiya Siddhanta, or Gaudiya Tattva, the emphasis here is on seva, on service, humble service, kinkar bhav. Ai nanda tanasha kinkaram. Kinkar. This is the whole thing. But sometimes, especially devotees, they get sidetracked because of their own parabdha. Some devotees, they have parabdha. They have samskaras for yoga. They have samskaras for gyan. They have purva samskaras from previous life's cultivation. We have deep mental impressions due to our previous activities, which push us to move in a certain direction. They make us incline towards particular activities. We have samskaras for tapasya, austerity. You see many devotees, before they were devotees, they would do so many different kinds of fasting. 7-day fast and 14-day fast and 21, all kinds of fasting. And they rather liked it. It was their nature, their natural proclivity. And some devotees, they were college students and they would study day and night in the library and this and that. And bookworm. Just reading, devouring every book and reading every subject matter. Becoming so much learned in all these things, then they come into Krishna consciousness and they become so mad after the Shastras and maybe mad after Tapasvi, Ikadasi Vrata and Chaturmasya Vrata and this Vrata and that Vrata. And sometimes they can become sidetracked and lose the essence, which is what Vrindavan Das Thakur is trying to say, the Dasi and the Dasas, the Dasi Bhav and the Dasa Bhav, that I am a humble servant. I think in that there's kind of a blend of both. The ideal is a blend of bhakti gyan and the submissive service attitude. They go together. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in Puri, when he was describing the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya, he said, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. He says, Mahaprabhu, Nija Bhakti Yoga, your bhakti yogis, they are symptomized by two characteristics, Vairagya and Vidya. They have Vairagya, detachment. They are exemplars of a renounced viewpoint. They are exemplars of a renounced lifestyle, simple living, high thinking. And that's Vairagya. And they are exemplars of Vidya, Vairagya Vidya, but not Vidya, but Paravidya, transcendental knowledge, Alokik Gyan. Your devotees are very much interested in the highest form of knowledge. The highest form of knowledge translates and expresses itself as prema. The loving service of the Lord. This, if someone is absorbed in loving service of the Lord, we can understand that he is the topmost learned person. As Lord Chaitanya was inquiring from Ramananda Roy, he said, my dear Ramananda, can you please tell me who is a wealthy person? Who is really wealthy? Who is a dhani? Dhani kaun hai? Who is really wealthy? And Rai Ramananda, actually speaking the answers dictated by Mahaprabhu from within the heart, he said, a truly wealthy person, a Kaurapati, is a person who has prema bhakti, one who has Krishna prema. He is wealthy. This is the prema pamartha mahan. This is the real wealth. So the real Vairagya Vidya, the highest expression of Vidya, is to know God. This is Paravidya. The highest form of knowledge is to know God, to know ourselves, and to live in a loving relationship with that knowledge. That knowledge is personal. The ultimate expression of knowledge is that knowledge, in the beginning, knowledge has an impersonal manifestation. But that impersonal manifestation, eventually, it becomes Prakash. Says Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavacham Parambhavam. Says Pratyaksha Vagavam Dharmyam. Pratyaksha Vagavam Dharmyam. Pratyaksha Dharma. Pratyaksha Dharma. This means that this vidya, this paramarthic vidya, knowledge of God will come to become Prakash. Because the knowledge of God means knowledge of the person, because ultimately God is a person, Purusha. So this is Dharma, this is Prakash, it becomes manifest. When one has knowledge, the highest knowledge is knowledge of God. And the highest understanding of God is the personality of Godhead. And when one understands the personality of Godhead fully, that's not fully, but as much as possible, at that level of understanding, one is at the level of prema. And the level of prema, one has darshan, sakshan darshan. Pratyaksha vagavam dharmyam. This dharma, this paramarthic dharma, or this dharma, religion, this paravidya, which is religion, you get pratyaksha, it's manifest. You get darshan of Krishna. So therefore, vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. The bhakti yogis, they are naturally detached, and they are full of knowledge, because they're aware that service to the personal Godhead is the highest expression of knowledge. They're aware of that, and they're practicing that, although they have not had direct darshan of that personality of knowledge. The supreme personality of knowledge. Right? We say the supreme personality of Godhead. But actually Krishna is the supreme personality of knowledge. Because the absolute truth, which means the absolute knowledge, is personal. So Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Knowledge.
It's interesting way to look at it.
So Krishna, Vrindavanas Thakur, he's saying that this scholarship, this mundane scholarship that evaporates, or this scholarship which merges, or this scholarship which evaporates in Brahman, because there's no scholarship anymore there, is insufficient to see the beautiful form of Shamsundar. And then he goes on again. Then the next level he says, Bada kirti haila chaitanya nahipai, bhakti vasya sabi prabhu chari vedagai. By popular opinion, one cannot achieve Lord Chaitanya. The four Vedas declare, chari vedi gai. The Lord is controlled only by devotional service, bhakti vasya. Vashibhut, it's described, vashibhut. Bhakti vasya sabai prabhu. This is all the Vedas are describing. One can learn, perceive God or control God only by devotional service. So now that in the purport, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, one can satisfy Krishna simply by devotional service. Gajendra, the elephant, did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied with him. There's a very important verse from Chaitanya Mango. In other words, sometimes we've heard the phrase, you must have heard, that Krishna consciousness is very easy for the simple. It's very easy for the simple and innocent, but very difficult for the crooked. So if someone is innocent and saralata, innocent and simple and pure in his mind, it's easy to catch up the principle of bhakti. But if one is deceitful by nature, or hypocritical, which means he's crooked, then the process of bhakti becomes a little difficult. Lochandas Thakur in Chaitanya Mangal, he cites this verse and describes how he cites the example of different personalities who attain this mercy of the Lord because of their simplicity and their devotional outlook. Then I'll just read the English, because it's a long verse, and it's a Sanskrit verse, actually. But it just mentions their names, basically. So now, Lochandas Thakur is asking a hypothetical question to the readers of Chaitanya Mango. Because sometimes when we hear, when we attend classes, if we attend some rather difficult classes, maybe some classes on Rasa Tattva, and they're explaining some principles from Ujjwala Nilamani, the 360 different types of Nayakas, there's 360 different types of gopis, and there's so many Vipaksha gopis and Paksha gopis and Surit Sakis and there's all these different categories. And then one devotee raised the hand and he said, Maharaj, do we have to know all these intricacies and all these details of each and every tattva to go back home, back to Godhead? On one level we can say yes, it's necessary, but on another level we can say no. As Prabhupada had spoken this point, he said, if you are a philosopher, we have so many books of philosophy for you to wrap your mind around. He didn't exactly say this, but so many books of philosophy which you can study and spend your whole life understanding. And if you are not a philosopher, and if you're simple-minded, the word is saralata, simple, innocent, pure-minded, then simply chant Hare Krishna and you'll attain all perfection. So either we key in on this low level of chanting Hare Krishna, but that's not so low because you have to be saralata and innocent, or we go to the higher level of philosophical inspection and study, or somewhere in between. So most of us, of course, are somewhere in between. A little philosophy and a little chanting and a lot of prasada. Because we need the mercy. We need the mercy and the grace. And prasada is mercy and grace. And that keeps everything going. Because without prasada, there's no philosophy. And without prasada, there's no chanting. As they say in Braj, no bhojan, no bhajan. Bhojan means food. No eating, no chanting.
No bhojan, no bhajan. Or they say, pet bolo anande, bhaja radha govinde. Pet bolo anande. It's not hari bol. Bolo means full. Pet bolo anande. If your stomach is full of bliss, then you can worship Radha Govinda. Pet bolo anande, bhaja radha govinde. It's like this. These are some jokes, but obviously Raghunath Das Goswami, his stomach was not full. He was eating 45 grams of chach, buttermilk. 45 grams does not fill a man's stomach. 45 grams of buttermilk he was eating and chanting 1 lakh of rounds every day, sleeping 2 hours, doing thousands of dandavats, thinking of the Leela Stali, offering dandavats, thinking of the Parishad, offering dandavats, doing Leela Smaran on 45 grams of buttermilk. So obviously his pet bolo anande, he was full of bliss, the bliss of Krishna consciousness. So it is possible also to do bhajan without bhojan on the highest level. Nidrahara vihara kadi vijato chadyanta tino chayo. Right? Sis Goswami's Nidrahara vihara kadi vijato. No sleeping, no eating, but Radha Krishna Gunasmritir Madhurima Nandena Samhoito. Radha Krishna Gunasmritir. Radha Krishna Gunasmriti. They were absorbed in the beautiful qualities and leelas of Radha and Krishna without eating or sleeping. So gradually we work our way to that absorption. So Krishna's Kaviraj is saying, this verse he's saying, did the hunter Dhruva have any piety? Did age disqualify 5-year-old Dhruva? Did Gajendra possess any learning? Did Kubja, Kamsa's maidservant, did she have any beauty? Did Sudama Brahmana, the friend of Krishna, have any wealth? Did the social status of Vidura disqualify him? Did the prowess of Ugrasen disqualify him? Madhava was pleased with their devotional service. He is not pleased with material qualities. So Lochandas Thakur, and this verse, which is a rather famous verse, which is also quoted in Sandarvas by Jiva Goswami, when he's describing bhakti or devotional service, the qualification to take up devotional service or attain perfection. Because there are verses we read, Janmaishvarya Shuta Shrivir, Janmaishvarya Shuta Shrivir. As a result of punya karma in previous life, good activities, one is rewarded in the next life. Janma Aishvarya Shruta Shrivir. With bodily beauty, which Kubja didn't have. With Aishvarya, with wealth, he's rewarded with wealth. He becomes Birla or Bill Gates or whatever, whomever. Becomes very wealthy. And Sudama didn't have that. And learning, he becomes very learned. Shruti Dara. So he says, well, what learning did Gajendra have? He was an elephant. But somehow, because in his previous life, of course, he was a king, and I believe he was a king, and he remembered some shloka. When he was a king, he was a Vaishnav king in his previous life. And as often religious, pious people, they often recite every day some shlokas. Gopal Sahasranam, or Purushottam Yoga chapter of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, or Hanuman Chalisa, Radha Kripa Kataksha, Krishna Kripa Kataksha, Vishnu Sahasranam. They recite this every day as part of their religious ritual, or their offering. And then that's all they do, 5-10 minutes a day, then the rest of the day they do their other work. So this king, he was reciting some shloka to glorify the Lord in his previous life as a human being. And that entered into his chitta. And then he died. And there was some curse or whatever. And he became an elephant. The story in Gajendra Moksha, 8th canto. And then at the very end, when he was getting chewed up by the crocodile and he was about to faint and give up the fight and die, and then he plucked a lotus flower with his trunk. And he held the lotus flower towards the sky, and then he remembered. Of course, we all have heard the expression that elephants never forget. Elephants have good memory. But this elephant remembered a shloka from last life. And that shloka came to his mouth, and he recited the shloka somehow or other. The same thing with Judd Barrett when he became a deer. He also spoke, he chanted the holy name when he left his deer body. So this is possible. We see in Jarikan forest, even 500 years ago, when Mahaprabhu was going through the forest, raising his arms, just like Mahaprabhu downstairs, arms like that. Dancing through the Jarikand, Haribol, 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 telling all the tigers and deer and elephants, and they were all chanting, Haribol, Haribol. They were chanting. Just like devotees, they say that the dogs, the Mayapur dogs, they're chanting Ghor, Ghor, Ghor. Ghor, Ghor, Ghor. And the dogs in Radhakund, the dogs in Vrindavan are chanting, Rade, 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 Rade. They're chanting Radhe, but in their own way. But it's actually, if you slow it down, it's actually Radhe, 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 Radhe. But if you're just listening and you're thinking, oh, these dogs are disturbing me, disturbing my sleep. You think they're saying rough, rough, or wah, wah, or whatever. But if you listen closely, it's very guttural. It's from deep in the throat, like old men. When people get old, their voice gets very deep. Like Prabhupada's voice is very deep. When you get old, it also voice goes down. So these dogs have very deep voice, because they're very old devotees. and they're chanting, Radhe, Radhe, Radhe. But here, you go to the bank of the Ganga, the dogs go, Gore, 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 Gore. It seems to me like this. So even the non-humans can glorify the name of the Lord. Se navadvipe hena parkasha haila jatabhattacharya eka janina janila. So he's saying that such revelations were taking place in Navadvip. That the simple, the meek, the humble, the servants, the tailors, the any kind of person, the dobis that were serving Srivas Thakur, they were getting Krishna prema. They were getting the mercy of Gauranga. Because they weren't proud. They were simple people, humble people, villagers, doing the tailor, the person cutting the clothes for Srivas or the dobi. They were getting the mercy. They were seeing Lord Chaitanya. Oh, so beautiful, so attractive. He's a Navadvip Vasi. He's a Nadia Vasi like us. We're so fortunate to see the Lord in Shiva Sangam. So this innocence, this non-judgmental attitude, they're not judging the Lord or weighing the Lord or measuring the Lord. They were just accepting, okay. So beautiful Nam Kirtan he's doing. And they were getting the mercy freely. But all these pundits and munis and high thinkers, who Mayavadis and Gnostics and Pashandis, they were seeing with their eyeballs, they were seeing the Mahaprabhu, but they were not getting the mercy. Because of their mani. Their pride. Pride in their self-worth. Pride in their in their yogic powers. Pride in their renunciation. Pride in their knowledge. Now he's saying the Bhattacharyas. There's so many Bhattacharyas. It's a famous Brahmin name in this part of the world, Bhattacharya. Just as we have our Gopal Bhattacharya. So it says, none of these, yet not one of the Bhattacharyas understood about the revelations going on. Being puffed up with the prestige of scholarship, the society of learned scholars monopolized the glories of Navadvip, yet they were unable to understand the appearance and activities of Lord Gaurasundar. So you have to understand, 500 years ago, there's two parallel societies going on here. Parallel societies. There's the underdog. There's the minority group. Like in any society, there's what they call the minority group. And the plurality, minority and plurality, majority and minority. So, for example, if you go to Singapore or you go to Pakistan, the majority group is Muslim and the minority group is Hindus. You go to Karachi. If you go to Karachi in Pakistan, everywhere are Muslims. It's a Muslim country, a Muslim city, Karachi. But then there's small enclaves of Hindus. So they're the minority, and they feel oppressed, and they feel not so very secure. Any moment they can be wiped out or eliminated. So the same thing, there were parallel societies in Navadvip 500 years ago. The minority society was the Gauranga Bhaktas, Gauranga Prem Sangha. That handful, it was only a handful, 200. 200 Antaranga Bhaktas were meeting in Srivasangam. This is Srivasanga Leela. We're talking about Srivasangam now. There's 200 devotees. Do you think there were only 200 devotees in all in Navadvip? 500 years ago? Not exactly. There were thousands and thousands and thousands of people living here. This is a center of learning for Eastern India. This is a university city. Just like in different cities in France and England, there's Oxford, or I don't know about France, but there's famous cities that are famous for universities. There are big university and college towns. Practically everyone in town is a student. I know that I went to one school, a state school, there were 40,000 students in the school. 40,000 students in the school, on the campus. And everywhere, the whole village was nothing but the campus. It was just students and people serving the students. You know, cooks and cleaners and all these kinds of things. So the same way, Navadvip was a center of learning, and these Bhattacharyas, they had all the tolls. They were the deans of all the schools. There were so many Sanskrit schools. And these Bhattacharyas, it says here, say Navadvipa Hene Prakasha Haila. This is the purport. Bhakti Sanatha says, they monopolized the glories of Navadvip. The Navadvip Mahima. At that time, the glory of Navadvip was Naya. Navadvip was glorious for Naya. Naya Shastra, for logic. And Navadvip was glorious for Vyakaran, for grammar. So people came here to study logic and Sanskrit. And the Bhattacharyas were the gurus. They were the teachers, with hundreds and hundreds of students. So that was the main society, the majority. Teachers, Bhattacharyas, and their students, and Shaktas. They're worshippers of Durga, Shaktas, and all these students and teachers. Then a parallel society is this handful of Vaishnavas clustered or collected around the golden honeybee. I mean the golden lotus flower. All the bees were buzzing around the golden lotus flower of Lord Chaitanya. This is the parallel society, the minority of Lord Chaitanya. And gradually, of course, he built up his following. But they were not in the majority. They did not monopolize the glories. There were a handful of people meeting in someone's courtyard. It was a private club, just like in Bombay and Calcutta, they have these clubs, private clubs. You pay some membership fee, you go there, you play bridge, they have a swimming pool and gymnasium, all these things. It's for the very elite and selected people. So this was a Harinam club. This is the Harinam club. It was over here in Srivasangam. There was a wall around the place. There were 200 people inside this minority society. But outside, everywhere else in Navadvip, were all the Shaktas and all these students of Naya underneath all these Bhattacharyas. And these Bhattacharyas were completely blind. They didn't even know about the society of Gauranga. They couldn't appreciate their activities. They had no access there. They didn't understand. Na janila. It says, ek jani na janila. Jaina Bhattacharya ek jana na janila. Na jana. Ek jana na jana. Not even one smart, there were so many smart people, so many Bhattacharyas. They were acharyas of Sanskrit and Naya. Not one of them understood the glories or activities of Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, they could not go back to Godhead. Janma karma chame devam evam myovati tatvata tyakvate ham punarjama nayati mamati sarjana. If you don't understand the activities of the Lord, you cannot go back to Godhead. So they're living with the Lord, living in a holy dham, and completely ignorant of the Lord. Very interesting fact. He sabalila rakabu nahi pariched avirbhava tirobhava e kahived. Although the Vedas describe the Lord's appearance, avirbhav, and his disappearance, tirobhav, There is actually no end to his pastimes. The activities of the Lord are eternal. One should not consider that simply because they appear and disappear, they are under the clutches of material time. So this concept of Avirbhav and Tirobhav is sometimes a little mystifying to the devotees, because the Lord is always here, but sometimes he doesn't manifest himself. It's called prakat and aprakat, manifest and unmanifest, prakat lila and aprakat. His prakat lila comes in a scheduled fashion, predicted and described in Shastra. At this time, in this age, the Lord will make his prakat, his manifest appearance in such and such a place. And who's ever there will see the Lord. Some will see the Lord and appreciate him with the eyes of devotion. Some will see the Lord and oppose him with the hearts of envy. So seeing is going on both sides. Some are appreciating and attaining the prem seva of the Lord and the eternal loving service of the Lord. And some are envious of the Lord, rejecting the Lord, challenging the Lord, fighting the Lord. And they're killed by the Lord, but they're also awarded. They're given mukti, sayuja mukti, generally. Sometimes sarupya mukti and Krishna lila. But then that's the prakat lila. Then there's the aprakat lila. That means his unmanifest aprakat. It's prakat to some and aprakat to others. So in this particular pastime, not everyone sees him. Only those who have love see him. When it's prakat lila, Duryodhan sees him. Shakuni, everyone saw Krishna in Hastinapur. That's prakat lila. But in aprakat lila, only the premi bhaktis see him. So that's always going on, aprakat lila. So this is Avirbhav Tirobhav. So Vrindavan Das Thakur is saying here, there's no end to his pastimes, although we use the term Avirbhav and Tirobhav. It's the analogy is given like the sun. The sun is always shining in the sky. But we are turning in a particular axis, so we don't see the sun. It's not that the sun rises or sets, but we change our viewpoint. We change our posture. So it appears to us that it's rising and setting, but the sun is fixed in its place. We're moving and all of a sudden it's dark, and we turn there and the sun is again there. So it's the same way. We're talking about the Lord, but now we have to think of something closer to home. The Vaishnava. The Avirbhav and Tirobhav. The appearance and disappearance of the Vaishnava. The Vaishnavas are also always here. But just like the sun is always here, the Vaishnava is always here, he just appears to disappear. Sometimes he's here in a tangible form, and everyone can see the Vaishnava. And then when he disappears, he's also here, but then only his disciples, or only his surrendered devotees can see him and perceive him. When Prabhupada was asked in New York, Prabhupada was crossing the street, and he was walking with some devotees, and they asked him, they said, Srila Prabhupada, do you miss your spiritual master? It's been so long, do you miss him? He said, no, he's not God. He's right here with me. Can't you see him? My spiritual master is right here with me. Can't you see him? So this is the fact that the spiritual master is always with the true devotee. He never leaves the true devotee. Separation is simply, just like Krishna, Radharani sitting on Krishna's lap during Prem Vaichitya. There's four types of Vipralamba. One is Prem Vaichitya, when Radharani feels separation even when she's with Krishna directly. So this is like the Avirbhav and Tirobhav. The guru appears to disappear from the disciple, although he's right there with him. He appears to disappear only to increase the attachment of the disciple. And then, in that disappearance, lila, or you can say, feature of the guru, the disciple realizes the presence of the guru even more. So this is the end of the class. So we'll continue this chapter tomorrow. So disappearance is actually a way, it's actually the way that the guru manifests to the disciple to increase his attachment. Because guru is eternal, sadguru. So this principle, Avirbhav and Tirobhav, there's simply two aspects of the same phenomenon. The phenomenon is that disciple and guru have eternal relationship. Guru is always manifest. Sat Shishya and Sadguru. The Guru is always manifest to the Sat Shishya. But he shows features of appearing and disappearing. Avirbhav and Tirobhav. Just like the sun is always manifest to the earth planet. But it shows features of rising and setting. It's like this. Because we never lose the Guru. If our mind comes and if we reject Guru or we give up Guru, like we can say, oh, it's the sun is never going to rise. It's always going to be dark. That's not true. In a few hours the sun will be there. So we may lose perception of Guru, or we may lose our connection with Guru, but Guru is always there in the background. So, is there any questions? There's maybe 1 minute we can ask questions. Yes? The question is, yesterday's class it was mentioned that hypothetically, or let's just say that Krishna appeared before us and asked us what would our eternal service like to be. Because it's indicated by our acharyas and mahajans that devotees have particular services. You can also read in Radha Krishna Ganadesh Deepika. It describes specific services rendered by the Ashtasakhis and also by the Manjaris, etc. They have specific services. And so each devotee will have a specific service and also a variety of ordered services that will be ordered by their guardians. So then, what service? So then the question is, we're in conditioned state of mind, so to think like this, is this good or bad, or what is the value of such thinking? The value of such thinking is that you're remembering Krishna. Satatam Smaratam Vishnu. Satatam Smaratam Vishnu. One should always, this is the aphorism from Vedanta Sutra, Satatam Smaratam Vishnu. One should always, somehow or other, Satatam Smaratam. One should always remember Vishnu. So if you meditate on his feet, or you meditate on deity form, or you meditate on the name and chant the name, or you meditate on seva, meditating on doing seva, just like the South Indian Brahmin from Prakoshtipur or whatever it's called. He was meditating on cooking sweet rice. So he was also a conditioned soul, you can say. We don't know actually his position. But he was meditating and he burned his finger. So you may be meditating, you may be meditating on assisting the Lord in his jalakeli. When you come out of your meditation, your kurta may be wet. Your kurta may be wet from Ganga Jal. Because there are stories of Srinivasacharya, in his biography of Srinivasacharya, is describing when he would meditate on serving the holy pastimes. Ho ho, holy hey! In this holy lila, throwing colors, liquid pitchkari. He's meditating in his sadaka rup, a nitya lila of holy at Radhakund, and he woke up and he had all colors on his white dhoti. So the value is that you're remembering Krishna, and you're thinking of the right thing, because usually we're scheming and planning all kinds of wrong sevas and wrong activities. You're meditating on the possibility of serving the Lord's jalkeli lila. That's a lot better than thinking of the possibility of enjoying Rati Kali Leela with some lady of this world. So it's always good to think of Krishna. Of course, it's like a dwarf trying to catch the moon, or a blind man trying to see the stars. But as is told, Mukha Kavitakara Yansabara Smarane, Tarigana Deki, Lango Banga Deki, it says that by the mercy of the Guru, Mukha Kavitakari, a Murkha can speak poetry. So if we desire like that, Yeyatamam Prapadyante Tam Satam Vajamyaham, if we genuinely desire, yes Krishna, I would like to someday in my, this is Siddhi Lalasa, which usually happens at Bhava. At the level of Bhava, we start reciting prayers called Siddhi Lalasa. There's a section of Prarthana called Siddhi Lalasa, desiring perfectional stage and Siddhadeha. Nitya Seva. These are prayers that are recited by Bhava Bhaktas as a bhajan. There's some Prartanatmika, there's Dainya Bodhika, and Siddhi Lalasa. There's three categories of Prartana, three categories of prayers. So we can dip into these, sometimes we dip into these Siddhi Lalasa prayers, even though we're conditioned souls, even though we're neophytes. Shama Gauri Angai Dibho, Sham Gauri Angai Dibho, Chandanera Ganda. Right? Radha Krishna Pranamora Jugala Kishore. We sing the song by Narottam. This is Sri Lalasa. O Sham, O Gauri Sham. When will I grind chandan and smear it on your bodies? Lepana, chandan lepana. Sharir, deha lepana. When will I smear on your bodies fresh chandan mixed with chuya, which I have ground myself? This is the prayer of a Bhava Bhakta who has Siddha Deha.
But we sing it. It's in our Vaishnava songbook,
isn't it? Radha Krishna Pranamor Jugala Kishore. You know the song. So your idea of desiring to assist the Lord in Jalkeli, maybe dress the Lord in his bathing outfit, or cheer for him when he's splashing Radharani, or to give him lotus flowers to throw at Radharani, or whatever your particularities of your meditation are, there's nothing wrong. It is a good thing. This is called Smaran. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Smaranam has to begin somewhere. We start Smaranam. There's five levels of Smaranam, but at least we should start at some level. The last level is Samadhi. But we don't get to Samadhi until we go through the five steps, beginning with simple Smaranam. Occasional recollection of the Nam, Rup, Guna, and Leela of the Lord, and maybe occasionally thinking of some seva that I would like to do eternally. It is completely bona fide. It's not imagination, it's actually, because the background is sincere service and surrender. It's desiring some perfectional stage. It's called Ashabandha. It's part of practices at the level of bhava, but in an elementary way, in a small way, it's also done at the level of sadhana bhakti. Ashabandha. Hoping against hope and siddhi lalasa. It is a small part. Mostly we're doing Vaidhi Sadhana or whatever. So it's okay. Most people's minds never work in this direction. They don't think like that. That's why I was trying to open this idea of thinking like this. Because we do have eternal relationship. Relationship means a relationship of love. We say every jiva has an eternal relationship with God. Okay, fine. We hear that from day one to day 10,001. So then what is my individual relationship with God? What is my... And then relationship means sambandha. Krishna sambandha. What sambandha? Prem sambandha. All the relationships are prema. All the relationships are based on love. A loving relationship. Mother, son, servant, master. Conjugal lover or wife. Like this. Or friend. These are loving relationships. And relationships are based on exchanges. And exchanges are based on service. I help you, you help me. I serve you, you serve me. That's a natural progression. I have a loving relationship with Krishna. What is that eternal relationship? What am I feeling? What am I inspiring for? What am I desiring? What's coming within me by my studies and reading and bhajan? And then let's make it becomes more and more focused. Like in a microscope, in a laboratory, there's 10 power, then there's 20 power, 50x, and 100x, and 500x. And you keep changing, you get more and more powerful through the microscope. You see more minutely the object, the specimen. So we have to see more minutely the specifics of me. Who am I? Okay, Jivara Swarupaya Krishna Nichidas. Okay, fine. You're a generic das. I am generic das. Acha, very nice. Well, where do you do your dashood? Well, I don't know, there. Das land. And Das Dham. Well, in Dwarka, is that your Nitya Seva Stali? Is it in Dwarka? Is it in Shiva Sangam? Is it Mahaprabhu's house? Is it in the Ghat? Where is it? Everything is a hierarchy. The whole idea of Brihad Bhagavatamrita is to help us awaken to the concept of hierarchy. There's specific parakoshas, specific forms of the Lord, specific relationships and specific sevas and specific levels of holy dhams. And each jiva will find his place. Water seeks its own level. Water seeks its own level. Jivas seek their own perfection. That's unique, individual, personal, and full of rasa. So this is the... We have to swim through the ocean of introspection, through the cloudy waters of conditioning, and find the clear, you know, when you're swimming underwater, it may be cloudy. and the surface is sometimes cloudy, you go down deeper with some light, then you can see very clearly. And you can find some gems. The gem inside that is me, the treasure in my heart. What is the treasure? My own treasure, my own inner wealth. Bhakti is all about this. It's all about journey of self-discovery. Discover the treasure within one's own heart. If one is in Vatsalya Bhav, following Mother Yashoda, Nandan Yashoda, they will be the exemplars for Braja Vatsalya. Then there will be assistance. They'll have Braja Bhav. They'll have Vatsalya, the mood of a parent, like Rohini and Ambika and Kalimba. Even Balaram, although he's a friend, he also has Vatsalya Bhav. But someone who has the Stai Bhav, the Vatsalya Bhav, then they will live in Gokul, or they will live in Nandagram, and there'll be assistance of Yashoda and Nanda. And they'll share in that mood. They'll render some motherly-like service to Krishna. Their child will be Krishna or Balaram. It's like this. There's unlimited opportunities, unlimited job opportunities for assistant, you can say proxy mothers or assistant mothers. You'll share in that bhav. That's why if one is in Raghunuga Sadhana, he will, Prabhupada tells in 10th canto, chapter 9, there's some verses about Damodar Leela. He says, and Prabhupada in his purport, he said, this verse of describing Mother Yashoda churning butter, and she's churning yogurt into butter, and the flowers are falling from her hair, and she's perspiring, her breasts are moving, her cloth is moving on her breasts, and it's describing very minutely her form as she's churning yogurt. This is 10th canto, chapter 9. I can't remember the verse just now. In the purport, this is Prabhupada's own purport, because he purported the first 13 chapters of the 10th canto. Right? He's saying, this verse provides the ideal meditation for anyone who is interested in Vatsalya Bhav. Anyone who is interested in Vatsalya Bhav should meditate on Mother Yashoda churning yogurt like this for the happiness of Krishna, on the form that's called Rup Dhyan, the form of Mother Yashoda. So in the same way, one that's called Braja Anusarata. This is describing nectar devotion. It says, Braja Anusarata, one should follow in the footsteps, Anusar. Anukaran and Anusaran. Braja Anusarata, one should follow in the footsteps of a resident of Vrindavan. So if you're interested to have motherly bhav or parental bhav for Krishna, this Vatsalya Bhav, then you will follow in the footsteps of Nanda and Yashoda. And then you will take birth in Boma Vrindavan from the womb of a gopi. And you'll grow up as a gopi over there in Boma Vrindavan. And then you'll be introduced to different mothers, Sridhan's mother, Sudan's mother, Sridhan, of course, is Radharani's mother, Kirtida and Yashoda. And these different mothers, they will train you in the bhavas. Because in the prema of the Vatsalya Bhav is Sneha, and then there's Sneha, and there's Rag, Anurag. There's different levels of prema in Vatsalya Bhav. There's no Mahabhav there, but there's different levels of prema. They will train you in the different moods and bhavas of Vatsalya Bhav, and then they will gradually train you in the different services. How to churn yogurt just like Mother Yashoda, then you'll churn yogurt for Krishna. Or you'll be in the house, in your house, and Krishna will come to your house and go cool and steal yogurt. And you'll have all these Vatsalya feelings for Krishna. The children means Krishna's coward boyfriends. They're eternal associates. They're children, but they're not so much children. They're fixed. There's no like people giving birth to children. There's nobody. It's like you won't go there and get a siddhaya and then get a husband who's a spiritual body and have a family. In that sense, like you have families now, right? Husbands and wives have families. You go there and your family will be the family of Krishna. His friends. They're not going to add new coward boys. They're not going to add new children. That's what I'm trying to explain to you. Yeah, and Krishna's Nitya Leela, they're all like around 13, 14. The ages are also given. And Radha Krishna Ganesh Deepika gives the ages for Subal and Sridham. Excuse me? To younger kid. Yeah. Well, that's what I said. This is the general presentation of the six Goswamis. Samacharya is a comment that there's different parakoshtas even in the spiritual world. Krishna's presentation of Gaudiya Siddhanta is Krishna's eternal age. He's Navayovanam. And he's having his Astakali Leela. And Astakali Leela, there's no babyhood. And just, you know, this Astakali Leela, he rises. He's in the kunj. It's all with Radharani. This is Astakali Leela. Coward boys, Radharani. There's no babyhood and all this Gokul Leela. But there's another parakashtra, there's Gokul. And Gokul, Krishna eternally stays 2 years old, 2.5 years old in Gokul. Then there's Chatikar, and he eternally stays 4 years old in Chatikar, like this. There's some commentary like that. So there's one Yashoda that's in Gokul with that Leela. There's another Yashoda in Nandagram. There's another Yashoda in Chatikar, another Yashoda in Kamyavan. And then there's these different expansions. There's Krishna's expansion, there's Gokul expansion is there, and that parakashta, that compartment. But the viewpoint which our six Goswamis present to us and our disciple succession, pretty much were presented with Gopi Bhav. And this idea of Vatsalya, he came to expand the Chari Bhakti Ras. It says, Chari Bhakti Ras. He came to offer these four rasas of Braj. Really, there's three. The Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhur. But the real emphasis, the majority emphasis of Gaudiya Sampradaya is Sobhakti Shriyam. The Sobhakti Shriyam means the Bhakti of Radharani, Radhadasyam. The service of Radharani and Gopi Bhav, Sakhi Bhav, Manjri Bhav. This is the primary presentation of Gaudiya Vaishnav, you know, Gaudiya Siddhanta. This is what the six Goswamis are presenting. Six Goswamis, all the writings of six Goswamis, and Vishnu Chakravarti and Bhaktivinoda, all basically they're presenting this. So these would be rather minority bhavas. Sakhi Bhav a little more, Vatsalya Bhav is something very less. But it can also be accommodated because it's Braj Bhav. Braja Madhurya, Braja Sakya, Braja Vatsalya. There's room for that. But this isn't the majority presentation. If you ask any Gaudiya Vaishnava, the basic presentation of Gaudiya Siddhanta is Radhadasyam. Become a servant of Radharani and Manjri Bhav. Manjri is one type of sakhi called Pran Sakhi or Nitya Sakhi. There's five sakhis. But you also see a verse that he came to broadcast Chari Bhakti Ras, the four rasas, which includes even Dasya. Braja Dasya. And that's what's said in Nectar Devotion. If one wants to be a servant of Krishna in Braj, then he will follow Raktak and Patrak. It's there in Nectar Devotion. If one wants to love Krishna as a mother, he will follow the ideal example of Yashoda Nanda. If one wants to worship Krishna as his friend, he will follow the ideal example of Sridham and Subal. If one wants to worship Krishna Madhur Bhav, Madhurya Bhav, he will follow Lita Vishaka and Rupa Mantri, of course. He is a Shiksha Guru for all Mantris. She is. So these are presented in a general way in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But then, the sequel to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Ujjala Nilamani by Rupa Goswami, which is very higher teaching. And there, it's all Sakhi Bhav. It's only about Mantris there. So this is the ultimate Siddhanta of Gaudiya Sampradaya is Manjri Bhav. But there is facility to cultivate these other bhavas also. That's why Rupa Goswami mentions them. Is that clear?